Chapter 13. Pitt rejected any thought of lunch and opened one of several granola bars he kept in his desk. Fumbling with the wrapper, held over a wastebasket to catch the crumbs, he kept his concentration locked on a large nautical chart spread across the desk. The chart's tendency to curl was held down by a memo pad and two books on historic shipwrecks that were opened to chapters on the Cyclops. The chart covered a large area of the old Bahama Channel. Flanked on the south by the archipelago de Camagüey, a group of scattered islands off the coast of Cuba, and the shallow waters of the Great Bahama Bank to the north. The upper left corner of the chart took in the Keysal Bank, whose southeastern tip included the Anguilla Keys. He sat back and took a bite out of the granola bar. Then he bent over the chart again, sharpened a pencil, and picked up a pair of dividers. Setting the needle tips of the dividers on the scale printed on the bottom of the chart, he measured off 20 nautical miles and carefully marked the distance from the tip of the Anguilla Keys with a penciled dot. Next, he described a short arc another 50 miles to the southeast. He labeled the top dot Croghan Castle and the lower arc Cyclops with a question mark. Somewhere above the arc is where the Cyclops sank, he reasoned. A logical assumption given the fact of the lumber freighter's position at the time of her distress signal and the Cyclops' distance as given in her reply. The only problem was that Raymond LeBaron's piece of the puzzle didn't fit. From his experience in searching for shipwrecks, Pitt was convinced LeBaron had performed the same exercise 100 times, only delving deeper into currents, known weather conditions at the time of the loss, and the projected speed of the Navy collier. But one conclusion always came out the same. The Cyclops should have gone down in the middle of the channel under 260 fathoms of water, over 1,500 feet to the bottom, far too deep to be visible to anything other than a fish. Pitt relaxed in his chair and stared at the markings on the chart. Unless LeBaron dredged up information nobody else knew about, what was he searching for? Certainly not the Cyclops, and certainly not from a blimp. A side-scan survey from a surface craft or a deep-diving submersible would have been better suited for the job. In addition, the prime search area was only 20 miles off Cuba. Hardly a comfortable place to cruise around in a slow-flying gas bag. Castro's gunboats would have declared open season on such an easy target. He was sitting lost in contemplation, nibbling on the granola bar, trying to see a probability in Raymond LeBaron's scheme that he had missed. When his desk speaker beeped, he pressed the talk switch. Yes? Sandecker, can you come up to my office? 5 minutes, Admiral. Try for two. Admiral James Sandecker was the director of the National Underwater and Marine Agency. A man in his late 50s, he was of short stature, his body thin and stringy, but hard as armor plating. The straight hair and Van Dyke beard were blaze red. A fitness freak, he adhered to a strict exercise regimen. His naval career was distinguished more by hard-nosed efficiency than sea combat tactics. And though he wasn't popular in Washington social circles, politicians respected him for his integrity and organizational ability. The admiral greeted Pitt's entry into his office with nothing more than a curt nod, then gestured to a woman sitting in a leather chair across the room. "Dirk, I understand you've met Mrs. Jessie LeBaron." She looked up and smiled, but it was an ingratiating smile. Pitt bowed slightly and pressed her hand. "Sorry," he said indifferently. "I'd rather forget I know Mrs. LeBaron." Sandecker's eyebrows pinched together. "Am I missing something?" "My fault," said Jesse, staring into Pitt's eyes but seeing only green ice. "I was very rude to Mr. Pitt last night. I hope he accepts my apology and forgives my bad manners."
"You needn't act so formal, Mrs. LeBaron. Since we're old pals, I won't throw a tantrum if you call me Dirk. As to forgiving you, how much is it going to cost me?"
"My intent was to hire you," she replied, ignoring the jibe.
He gave Sandecker a bemused look. "Strange, I had this funny idea. I worked for Numa."
"Admiral Sandecker has kindly consented to release you for a few days, providing, of course, you're agreeable," she added.
"To do what?"
"To look for my husband."
"No deal."
May I ask why?
I have other projects.
You won't work for me because I'm a woman, is that it?
Sex has no bearing on my decision. Let's just say I don't work for someone I can't respect. There was an embarrassed silence. Pitt looked at the Admiral. The lips were turned down in a grimace, but the eyes fairly twinkled. The old bastard was enjoying this, he thought.
You've misjudged me, Dirk.
Jessie's face was flushed in confusion, but her eyes were hard as crystal.
Please, Sandecker raised both hands. Let's call a truce. I suggest you two get together some evening and have it out over dinner.
Pitt and Jessie stared at each other for a long moment. Then Pitt's mouth slowly spread in a wide, infectious smile.
I'm willing, providing I pay.
Despite herself, Jessie had to smile, too.
Allow me some self-respect. Let's split the bill.
Done. Now we can get on with the business at hand, Sandecker said in his no-nonsense way. Before you arrived, Dirk, we were discussing theories on Mr. LeBaron's disappearance.
Pitt looked at Jessie.
There is no doubt in your mind that the bodies in the blimp were not those of Mr. LeBaron and his crew?
Jessie shook her head.
None.
I saw them. There wasn't much left to identify.
The corpse lying in the morgue was more muscular than Raymond, explained Jessie. Also, he'd been wearing an imitation of a Cartier wristwatch, one of those cheap replicas made in Taiwan. I'd given my husband an expensive original on our first anniversary.
I've made a few calls on my own, added Sandecker. The Miami coroner backed Jesse's judgment. Physical characteristics of the bodies in the morgue didn't match the three men who took off in the Prospertier.
Pitt looked from Sandecker to Jessie LeBaron, realizing he was getting involved in something he had wished to avoid. The emotional entanglements complicating any project that depended on solid research, practical engineering, and razor-sharp organization.
Bodies and clothes switched, said Pitt. Personal jewelry replaced with fakes.
Any thoughts on a motive, Mrs. LeBaron?
I don't know what to think.
Did you know that between the time the blimp vanished and when it reappeared in Key Biscayne, the gas bags inside the hull would have had to be reinflated with helium?
She opened her purse, took out a Kleenex, and daintily dabbed at her nose to give her something to do with her hands.
After the police released the Prospertier, my husband's crew chief inspected every inch of her. I have his report, if you care to see it.
You're very perceptive.
He found that the gas bags had been refilled. Not with helium, but with hydrogen.
Pitt looked up in surprise.
Hydrogen? That hasn't been used in airships since the Hindenburg burned.
Not to worry, said Sandecker. The Prospertier's gas bags have been refilled with helium.
So what's going down? Pitt asked cautiously.
Sandecker gave him a hard look.
I hear you want to go after the Cyclops.
It's no secret, answered Pitt.
You'd have to do it on your own time without NUMA personnel and equipment. Congress would eat me alive if they learned I sanctioned a treasure hunt with government funds.
I'm aware of that.
Will you listen to another proposal?
I'll listen.
I'm not going to hand you a lot of double talk about doing me a great service by keeping this conversation to yourself. If it gets out, I go down the drain, but that's my problem, true?
If you say so, yes.
You were scheduled to direct a survey of the sea floor in the Bering Sea off the Aleutians next month. I'll bring in Jack Harris from the Deep Ocean Mining Project to replace you. To head off any questions or later investigations of bureaucratic wrongdoing, we'll sever your connections with NUMA. As of now, you're on leave of absence until you find Raymond LeBaron.
Find Raymond LeBaron, Pitt repeated sarcastically.
A piece of cake.
The trail is 2 weeks cold and getting colder by the hour. No motive, no leads, not one clue to why he vanished, who did it, and how. Impossible is an understatement.
Will you at least give it a try? Asked Sandecker.
Pitt stared at the teak wood planking that made up the floor of the Admiral's office, his eyes seeing a tropical sea 2,000 miles away. He disliked becoming linked with a riddle without being able to calculate at the very least an approximate solution. He knew Sandecker knew that he would accept the challenge. Chasing after an unknown over the next horizon was a lure Pitt could never resist. If I take this on, I'd need NUMA's best scientific team to man a first-rate research vessel. The resources and political clout to back me up. Military support in case of trouble. Dirk, my hands are tied. I can offer you nothing.
What?
You heard me. The situation requires the search be conducted as quietly as possible. You'll have to make do without any help from NUMA.
Have you got both oars in the water? Pitt demanded. You expect me, one man working alone, to accomplish what half the Navy, Air Force, and Coast Guard failed to do? Why, hell, they couldn't find a 150-foot airship until it showed up on its own. What am I supposed to use, a dowser and a canoe?
The idea, Sandecker explained patiently, is to fly LeBaron's last known course in the Prospertier. Pitt slowly sank into an office sofa.
This is the craziest scheme I've ever heard, he said, unbelieving. He turned to Jesse. Do you go along with this?
I'll do whatever it takes to find my husband, she said evenly.
A cuckoo's nest, Pitt said gravely. He stood and began to pace the room, clasping and unclasping his hands.
Why the secrecy? Your husband was an important man, a celebrity, a confidant of the rich and famous, closely connected with high government officials, a financial guru to executives of major corporations. Why in God's name am I the only man in the country who can search for him?
Dirk, Sandecker said softly. Raymond LeBaron's financial empire touches hundreds of thousands of people. Right now it's hanging in limbo because he's still among the missing. It can't be proven whether he's alive or dead. The government has called off any further hunt because over $5 million have been spent by military search and rescue teams without a sighting, without a hint of where he might have disappeared. Budget-conscious congressmen will howl for scalps if more government money is spent on another fruitless effort. What about the private sector and LeBaron's own business associates?
Many business leaders respected LeBaron, but at one time or another, most of them were burned by him in his editorials. They won't spend a dime or go out of their way to look for him. As to the men around him, they have more to gain by his death.
So does Jesse here, said Pitt, gazing at her. She smiled thinly.
I can't deny it. But the bulk of his estate goes to charities and other family members. I do, however, receive a substantial inheritance.
You must own a yacht, Mrs. LeBaron. Why don't you assemble your own crew of investigators and look for your husband?
There are reasons, Dirk, why I can't conduct a large publicized effort. Reasons you needn't know. The Admiral and I think there is a chance, a very slight chance, that three people can quietly retrace the flight of the Prospertier under the same conditions and discover what happened to Raymond.
Why bother? Asked Pitt. All islands and reefs within the blimp's fuel range were covered by the initial search. I'd only be covering the same trail.
They might have missed something.
Like maybe Cuba?
Sandecker shook his head. Castro would have claimed LeBaron overflew Cuban territory under instructions from the CIA and flaunted the blimp's capture to the world. No, there has to be another answer.
Pitt walked over to the corner windows and gazed longingly down at a fleet of small sailboats that were holding a regatta on the Anacostia River. The white sails gleamed against the dark green water as they raced toward the buoy markers.
How do we know where to concentrate? He asked without turning.
We're looking at a search grid as large as 1,000 square miles. It would take weeks to cover it properly.
I have all my husband's records and charts, said Jesse.
He left them behind?
No, they were found in the blimp.
Pitt silently watched the sailboats, his arms crossed in front of him. He tried to probe the motives, penetrate the intrigue, lay out the safeguards. He tried to segregate each into an orderly niche.
When do we go? He asked finally.
Sunrise tomorrow morning, Sandecker replied.
You both still insist I lead the fishing expedition?
We do, Jesse said flatly.
I want 2 old hands for my crew. They're both on NUMA's payroll. Either I get them or I'll walk.
Sandecker's face clouded.
I've already explained. You've got the moon, Admiral, and you're asking for Mars. We've been friends long enough for you to know I don't operate on a half-assed basis. Put the 2 men I need on leaves of absence, too. I don't care how you do it.
Sandecker wasn't angry, wasn't even annoyed. If there was one man in the country who could pull off the unthinkable, it was Pitt. The Admiral had no more cards to play, so he folded. "All right," he said quietly. "You've got them." "There's one more thing." "Which is?" Sandecker demanded. Pitt turned around with a bleak smile. His gaze went from Jesse to the Admiral. Then he shrugged and said, "I've never flown a blimp."